All right, I've started the recorder, and we are going to NTI Colossians chapter 3, and let's see what that is. That is in the Kindle, that is on page 358, in the book. Okay, so page 358. Okay, NTI Colossians chapter 3. The world is a dream that seemed to be what you thought you wanted. If you look at it in denial, it can fool you for a little longer. For the world has in it a glimmer and a shine that may appeal to you in your forgetfulness. But nothing in the world can last. What it offers you is never eternal. And of course, that fits with the conversation we were having before I turned on the recorder. But it also reminds me of a Sufi poem I read this morning. And I don't remember who wrote this poem. It was a Sufi mystic. But in the poem, he compared the things of the world that we might seek to snow, and self-realization to jewels. And you know, as you contemplate that poem, you realize if we saw it that way, if we saw all these things in the world as snow, I mean, snow melts tomorrow here in Pueblo. You know, it's just, you know, it's how valuable is that? You know, if you put it in a bag and bring it in the house, it's going to melt. I mean, you know, it has no value at all. But then self-realization is jewels, you know. And that was just, I thought that was a wonderful poem and a wonderful way of looking at it. And this paragraph is really saying the exact same thing. You know, it says the world has in it a glimmer and a shine, and so does snow. You know, snow can be quite beautiful.
It can.
Right? It can be quite beautiful. But it can't last. It's never eternal. It's always going to melt. So it's the exact same idea. Turn your mind from the desires of the world. Set your mind on the certainty of the heart. It knows all that you truly desire. Your true desires are eternal. Remember yourself, which is eternal, and you will know that you cannot be satisfied with the glimmerings of the temporal. Remember yourself, which is eternal, and you will know with certainty that your focus cannot settle on something that shines for a little while. You know, one of the things that we tend to really value in this world is our health. You know, sometimes people will say, as long as you have your health, right? As long as you have your health. But if any of us, no matter how healthy we are, live long enough, guess what we're not going to have anymore? Our health, right? So even the one thing that we maybe value the most, you know, other than the mind, what happens? Her mother's 102, 103 now. 103. What happens to your mind if you live to be 103? Is it good? Is it a good mind?
No, she's petering out in her mind, but she comes back once in a while.
Yeah. But, you know, even your mind, you know, we value our minds, right? But even our mind is not going to last. I mean, even before this body dies, the mind could go away, right? So, you know, we love the health of the body, we love the strength of the mind, but they can't last either. So even if we're valuing those two things which seem valuable in the world, they're temporary. They're going to pass. My mind started to go about, it was after I moved to Pueblo, so it might have been about 4 years ago. And like, there's a significant difference in my mind than the mind I used to have, you know, and I can see it. And, I actually enjoy it. And the reason I enjoy it is because when my mind began to fail and began to not work, up until then I had a secret little fear that maybe really all we were was our brain. Maybe really all we were was our mind. And you know, but once my mind started to fail, I could really sense the I that is not changing, but the mind is different. You know, I'm not that sharp, really sharp, sharp woman that I used to be, right? It's starting to fail. So I'm not it. Because I'm still the same, right? There's something here that is still the same. So I really enjoy the fact that all of these things are temporary, like, you know, youth, health, mind, because I think that we can use that to realize what we really are. As we observe those things change over time, and yet you become more and more aware of that part of you that doesn't change. You know it's there. It's been the same since you were 5, 4, 3, whatever your earliest memory is, right? It's still there. That helps you to kind of distinguish between thinking you're the mind or the body and realizing what you really are. So the temporal can be used. But again, if you value the temporal, you know, I do know a few ladies whose mind is beginning to fail in the same ways as mine. It's really not any different. They're very worried about it, very afraid of it, you know? So the only difference is they still value their mind and they still think their mind is who they are, and they still see something very, very wrong with the fact that it's starting to not work. When actually starting to not work is a very natural process in this human life. At some point, it happens to almost everyone. Some people manage to stay sharp till the end, but almost everyone begins to experience some failure of mind, right? So it's not who you are. And if you value it, you will suffer when you start to lose it. So again, verses 5 to 11 says, "Remember yourself, which is eternal, and you will know that you cannot be satisfied with the glimmerings of the temporal. Remember yourself, which is eternal, and you will know with a certainty that your focus cannot settle on something that shines for a little while. To believe that you can be happy with anything that does not last is to deny that you are the truth of what you are. Do not deny yourself in the glimmer of the world. This is the way of loss. Therefore, remember who you are, although you are not fully aware. The little that you have is enough to carry you very far. Focus on your lessons and learn to change your mind. This is the practice that will lead you to see. As you see, you accept. And as you accept, you begin to desire. In this way, you follow yourself back to your home, which is the knowledge of your full joy and happiness." So it's interesting because last week we had an assignment to watch our passion, see where our passion was. And do you need to move? I see the sun's like right in your eyes. And in a moment it'll move again because it's temporal. You know? Yes. But we had an assignment in the last week to watch where your passion was. And passion was defined as where your faith and your desire are together. That's passion, right? And what this paragraph seems to be acknowledging is that most of us probably do not have full passion for awakening yet. We still do have passion out there in the world and different things. But it's telling us how we can change that if we want to make the change. It's saying, focus on whatever realization you have of your true self. And it says no matter how small that is, it says even the smallest amount of realization can take you very far. So what you really want to start doing is you want to just start noticing. I call it noticing the part of you that doesn't change. Also, some people will talk about the observer, learn to observe or watch your life rather than being involved in your life. Even while you're doing something that you know is not in alignment with this true purpose, even when you notice that your passion is going in a different direction, if you can step back and just watch it and not be fully in it, right? Even watch yourself as you go through those motions, that's helpful. So anything that you can do to be focused on who you really are instead of focused on the world and the personal self is going to help you. And this says...
And that's what you mean about changing your mind.
Yeah, in fact, changing your mind here, because the word mind has many, many definitions. If you look it up in the dictionary, there's like 10 of them. But thanks for saying that, because I wanted to bring that up and my mind had forgotten. The word mind here means attention. You know, so your mind is going outward, right? And even when you're looking at your own thoughts and your own emotions, that's still outward from who you are. You want to change your mind to be focused inward, right, on who you are, rather than you're having your mind. So change your mind. In this case, we're changing the direction of our attention, changing the direction of our focus.
I noticed that for me, I've had to drop my human agenda, or my civil agenda, or being a citizen. You know, it's hard not to have too many affairs, I guess you could say. So that's just, I guess, in the last week or so, I've discovered, or I've noticed, what my involvements are. And it doesn't, the involvements don't help me to progress on the,
yeah,
spiritually, I guess you could say. So even those, that's interesting. That's interesting when you're, to notice your agenda.
Yeah.
What, you know, how you rank or prioritize really what, because it could be health, it could be not, you know, it could be exercising your mind, keeping sharp, those types of things. Still, it's a human agenda.
Yeah.
And that's what I think, what do you think?
No, I think that becoming aware of your agendas, well, you know, like I exercise. If that's what you're asking about, like specifically, is exercise an agenda? It can be and it cannot be. I mean, I exercise, I eat, I breathe, I go to the bathroom.
I guess what I mean by agenda is a preoccupation and a distraction.
Yeah, you really have to watch your thoughts about it. You know, that's that you have to pay attention. You have to be honest with yourself. Self-honesty is probably the most important thing on the spiritual path. And it's also the most difficult thing on the spiritual path. And the primary reason that self-honesty is difficult is because of the belief that ego is bad. And combined with the belief, I am bad, you know. So if you believe ego is bad and you believe I am bad, and you put those two together, what that means is if I see ego in me, it's proof that I'm bad. And so this belief gets in the way of people being able to be honest. You kind of have to lie to yourself, because the last thing that you want to discover about yourself, I mean, literally the last thing that you want to discover is that you really are bad. You know, that you really are the unworthy one, that you really are the scum of the earth. And yet there's a part of your mind that thinks that's true. So you spend most of your time trying to not look at the one thing that you think is most true about you, because it's the last thing you want to see, right? And so that makes self-honesty very, very difficult. So I always recommend to people, learn to not judge ego when you see it. Learn to just say, that's ego, without judgment. And it's okay if you see it in others, and it's okay if you see it in yourself. Just, that's ego. Because as you can learn to see ego in yourself or others without judgment, just, it's ego, then you're going to learn to start being more and more self-honest, because you're breaking that little I'm bad connection in the mind. Because judging ego makes you believe ego's bad. But if you learn to see it without judging it, you let go of the belief that it's bad, right? Then you can start being self-honest. And once you can start being self-honest, then you're going to see all kinds of little motivations and agendas and things that you didn't even see before. They were hidden from you because you didn't want to see them. And then as you start to see them, you'll start, you know, some things you'll just drop immediately. Like the second you see it, you'll go, I don't need that anymore. And other things, you're a little more conditioned. It's a little more difficult to just drop it like a hot cake. But every time you see it, you go, there that is again. I don't really want that anymore. There that is again, but without judgment. I don't really want that anymore. And you kind of chisel it away, right? And then eventually it kind of falls away. But in order to be able to look at yourself and do that kind of work, the first thing that needs to go is the judgment of the ego. Yeah. But we all have stuff. I mean, every one of us has ego here still. And the only way to let go of it is to see it. So we're all going to be looking at ourselves and seeing ego. And it's really wonderful when you can get to where you can look at yourself and see ego and giggle. Oh, God, you know, I did that. Look what I just did. That was definitely ego. You know, that's wonderful, you know. You know, so. So that's perfect, because then you really start letting go of it quickly.
Look at what I just didn't do. Yeah,
you know, what I just didn't do. That was definitely ego, yeah. And I do. I laugh at my ego. I have gotten to the point where I laugh at my ego. I see it and I laugh at it. So, yeah.
I agree with people that say that we've romanticized the ego, and I think they have a point there. Would you agree with just get over it? That everyone's got one. And just get over yourself.
Yeah.
It seems like we're kind of stretching it out. We're milking it and wringing it.
Yeah. Well, you know,
romanticizing something.
What the ego really is, at least the way I define it, there's more than one definition. What the ego really is just that belief, that very firm belief that I am a very distinct and separate self. You know, that's really all that the ego is. And if you look at it that way, what's so bad about that? It's just a belief that you're a distinct and separate self. You know? There's nothing really that bad about that. Now, there's a lot of ways that you keep that idea alive. And in order to realize that you're not a distinct and separate self, you want to start seeing and letting go of all the ways that you keep that idea alive. You know, and, you know, comparing my mind to her mind and deciding which one of us is smartest, that would be a way of keeping it alive. So if I notice I'm doing that, then say, ah, look, you know, I'm comparing myself to Jacqueline. You know, I need to let that go. But it's not that I'm bad, it's just that this is how I'm maintaining this ego sense, and I've got a purpose to realize truth, to realize oneness, and so maintaining the ego sense is not aligned with my purpose. So I want to see all the ways that I maintain it and start letting go. Start saying, oh, that's not what I want, you know? That's all this is. It's a very, very simple process. But the problem comes from judging the ego as bad. And, you know, again, and the belief I'm bad. You put those together, you don't want to see the ego in yourself. And if you don't want to see the ego in yourself, how in the heck are you going to let it go? You know, it's like a trick. So again, what this is saying is, back to this, this is saying that in order to let go of some of these ego maintaining tendencies that you have. Because obviously when you're thinking about making money, I mean, you can see the quick connection to individual self, right? When you're trying to find the perfect romantic partner, individual self. When you're trying to get other people to look at you and think nice things instead of not nice things, individual self. See, all of these things that we do, all of these desires that we have in the world really have a purpose to reinforce the idea that I'm a distinct, separate individual self. That's why you want to let go of them, because you want to realize your oneness. It's not because you're bad, right? It's just because it's not what you want anymore. So what this is saying is one of the best ways to make that shift is to focus on what you are to any degree that you can. Focus on your true self. And we've all heard, or I think we all have, you remember The Secret was quite popular a few years ago, and when The Secret was out, they would say, you know, focus on what you want and you'll get it. Well, there's a truth to that. So focus on your true self. Focus on your true self, whatever degree of awareness you have, and that brings that more and more into your awareness. And also notice what this paragraph says. It says, this is a practice that will lead you to see. Because as you focus on whatever awareness you have of yourself, it gets stronger. You get a stronger awareness of your true self. So this will lead you to see. As you see, you accept. You begin to shift your identification from the person to that, right? You begin to accept, oh, that is what I am. And then as you accept, you begin to desire. Now you start putting your faith and your desire together, and you start having passion for the true self at this point. And in this way, you follow yourself back to your home. So you start with whatever little realization you have, and you just contemplate that as much as possible. It gets stronger and stronger and clearer and clearer. You start realizing that's what I am. I'm not this person. I'm this. I'm not this person. And then you start wanting more of that. You start wanting to go into it fully. You put your faith and your desire together, and you have passion. And you just go all the way home that way. See how easy it is?
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. It's easy.
Well, there's a line in the Course that said, love what you need.
Yeah, well, it says we love what we made. That's the personal self. Yeah, and that's why we have trouble letting go of it. And the interesting thing about that is I know people who are miserable and yet very attached to themselves. So we love what we made even if we hate it. That's the funny thing. And the reason we love it is simply because it is a distinct me. We love what we made, but we want to let go of that. And you don't let go of it by hating it, by the way, because when you hate something, that's just the other side of the love coin. You still got the same passion there. You let go of something by gently turning your attention a different way, changing your mind. Right? You just, when you notice you're thinking about your human self again and worrying about your human self problems, you go, ah, that's right, I don't want to reinforce this. I'm just going to shift my mind over here, and I'm going to remember my contemplation for this morning. I'm going to focus on that instead. Or I'm going to practice being the observer and watching rather than being so involved. Or I'm going to focus on that changeless self, that awareness, you know, awareness, watching, awareness. You know, all these different practices really have the same overall purpose. Ego, which again is nothing but a belief that you are a distinct individual, right? But that thrives on your giving it constant attention. When you stop giving it constant attention, it weakens and weakens and eventually dies. So you want to learn to place your attention on other things rather than on constantly thinking about yourself. And I don't think any of us could do this, but it would be fun just to even try it and notice how you can't do it. Try to count the number of times you think about yourself in a day. You won't be able to, but it will totally convince you that your attention is there. You know, if you tried to think about the number of, you know, try to count the number of times you think about yourself in a day, and you will see that our attention is in the wrong place.
It occurs to me that this is why the self-inquiry, who is the I that wants this or thinks that, why that's so helpful.
Yes, absolutely. You're starting to look at it and step back from it. Yeah.
And so, that's why we go to prayer.
Yeah. Say more about that, why we go to prayer? What do you mean?
Well, because, you know, if my attention is on Mike all day long, and I shift and go to prayer, then, you know, I might get an insight that, hey, I want to reach out to a brother of mine, or
yes,
I need to focus on this aspect of my work right now, or whatever.
And, you know, and there's a big difference between focusing on your work and thinking about yourself involved in your work. Like if you're focused on your work, whatever you're doing right now, you actually are just looking at the task at hand. When you're thinking about yourself, you're thinking about what are other people going to think of me? Am I going to fail? Am I going to, you know, so there is a way to be focused on your work without being focused on yourself.
So you're saying
it's true.
Yeah, it is. I need some
steps. You mean seeing yourself as a...
No, she's just saying she needs steps on how to do that.
You mean to not see yourself in that role?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I, you know, when I'm focused on my work, I'm totally into my work, and I'm not thinking about Regina at all. But there was a time when I used to always be thinking about, how would this look to others? Was I going to get recognized for this? Was my butt going to get called on the line for this? Were people going to, you know, I had the I tied up in the work. But somehow over the years, what's happened is now I go into the work and I'm so into the work, you could even argue there is no I. Because I'm so into the work. There's no I if there's no thought of me or I, right? There's just the work. So you can be very, very focused on a task and have no thinking about yourself going on. You said you needed tips. I'll tell you how I started this. I'll give you the first thing I tried. That was learning to really listen to people. Whoever was talking, you know, not just teachers, but I mean any conversation at all. Learn to listen without thinking. And that's a part of how I started learning to get the attention away from the eye. That was my first step. Because most of us, when we're listening, we're actually also thinking. And not only that, a lot of that thinking is about, you know, I in some way, right? So if you can learn to just listen to people without thinking, every time you catch yourself thinking, say, no, I'm here just to listen, and turn and just gently turn your attention back to listening. And it will take time, probably. But that was my first training technique in training my attention not to be on my mind by putting my attention on whoever I was listening to in the moment. That was my first step. And I found it to be very helpful.
Me too. That's what true connection is, because people realize you're present.
Yes.
That's one of the things that I found so attractive in someone else when I noticed what a good listener that person was. And they had you. You were their whole attention at the time. I mean, you felt honored and whatever, or if you saw them with another person. I mean, I was just attracted to that. I wanted to be that kind of a listener.
Yeah, and the people that I've met in this lifetime that I, you know, really think probably are enlightened. I never go for sure on giving the stamp of approval, yes, that one's enlightened. But the ones that I have met that I feel, yeah, that's probably true, they have that natural ability to be so in tune to you when they're with you. You know, that they give you the thought that you're the only one in the world. Right? You're the only one in the world. They don't have another concern. You're, that attention is just so there in such a loving and attentive way. I find that to be one of their consistent qualities, actually. Yeah. So, back to NTI. So again, this last paragraph that we read was saying start paying attention to yourself in any way that you can, and that's going to grow and eventually lead you back to yourself. So verses 15 to 17, may you practice your lessons in this way. Be grateful for the truth that you know. Practice it with wisdom. And pray that more truth be given. Be grateful to your brothers who show you what you have learned. Welcome your lessons in vigor that you may grow in mastery of the way. Embrace all that you see, knowing it comes from you, correct that which needs correction, and immerse the mind in the reflection of truth. There's something to hang on the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so again, be grateful for the truth that you know, whatever it is. Be grateful for what you know. Because, again, what we learned in The Secret is what you have gratitude for expands, right? So be grateful for whatever truth realization you have. And practice it with wisdom, right? I think your whole life is about practicing truth. That's what your whole life is for. So practice it with wisdom and pray. Ask for more insight, more realization, more truth to be given. And then I love this line. Be grateful to your brothers who show you what you have learned. That means, you know, the assholes too, right?
Particularly the assholes.
Yeah, the assholes. Because, you know, as you're getting all annoyed at them and angry at them and frustrated at them, they are showing you, you know, what you have learned and where you still have the opportunity to learn, right? And you need them. Because, again, remember, your purpose is to let go of all of the ways that you continue to hold on to the belief that you're an individual person. And in order to do that, you need to see those things. And these people who are, you know, apparently rubbing you the wrong way, they're actually showing you something, something that you need to see so that you can let it go. Now, there's a thought that never worked for me, and so I'll share it with you guys. I don't know if it works for you. If it does, use it, but it never worked for me. And the thought was, if I see it in him, that means it's in me. Sometimes that's true, but I found that that's not always true. There are people in this world and in this particular lifetime have a quality about them, you know, that I don't have and that I haven't had in this lifetime. So, you know, let's say somebody is stealing, you know, and I know they're stealing. And, you know, I saw them steal from you, and I saw them steal from you. And I'm, like, really getting irked that every time this person comes around, I notice they're in somebody's purse. They're stealing, you know. Well, I'm not a thief, right? And sometimes then people go analyzing, well, how do I steal? Well, that's you know, that's ridiculous. What I do is I go home and I ask myself in a different way. I say, okay, I noticed so-and-so stealing, and that is really upsetting me. And then I ask, why is that upsetting me? And I start looking at it. Well, if this was happening at a gathering of mine, you know, maybe I'm really afraid people are going to blame me. You know, it's a reflection on me. People are going to think I'm bad because I have this person around that's stealing, you know. You know, it doesn't mean that I steal, but it does mean that in some way this is triggering me, and there's something here I need to see, and I need to see that I'm embarrassed. You know, I'm afraid people are going to think badly of me. In fact, we were talking about, what was his name again, Sterling?
That's who I was just thinking of.
Right?
So if that's triggering me in some way, yeah. The fact that here's someone that obviously has this intense prejudice.
Yes.
Out of his learning, his upbringing. And it hits me that there's some part of me that doesn't acknowledge our differences.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I thought was kind of funny about this. I'm glad you're picking up on it, because I've watched, there's nothing on the news hardly in the last 3 days but this guy, you know, what he did.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just like nothing else on the news. And to be honest, he didn't nuke New York City, right? So there's something in the psyche of America that America is still not looking at, and this guy has become a scapegoat. And I'm not saying that, of course, to, you know, say that, you know, what he did was right, but if he had done something like, if he had been on the phone with his girlfriend, you know, trying to convince his girlfriend that there still is a Santa Claus, and why are you going around telling people there aren't a Santa Claus, people would have giggled at him and forgot about it, you know? He wouldn't have been on the news for 3 days solid. He's on the news for 3 days solid because America still has a problem, right, with differences. America still believes in some people are better than other people. And that's not only limited to race. Right. You know, that's limited to job status,
yeah,
right? You know, a CEO is better than a trash man, right? America has all of this in their psyche. And yet, they don't want to look at that in themselves. And so they deny it, right, within themselves. And then there's this guy, you know, saying all of these things that we obviously have agreed in our society you don't say. And here he is, he's caught dead, and now everybody's, you know, angry at him.
And this keeps happening over and over and over again. It happened with Paula Deen, it happened with the Dynasty guy,
yeah,
it's happening with this guy,
yeah.
It's happening over and over and over again.
Yeah, and what really is happening is nobody is looking at themselves and admitting, you know, I still got these ideas. I do think some people are better than others. You know, maybe sometimes it's racial. You know, maybe for me it's not racial, it's more economic. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter to me what race they are as long as they're professionals. But if they're, you know, if they're those people that aren't professionals, there's something wrong there. You know, they're, you know, the people who don't have jobs, the welfare people, you know.
Yeah, homeless people.
Homeless people, right. We all still have these prejudices in us, you know, and we're not admitting it. We're not looking at it. And so we're mad at this guy, right? And so when you get really mad at this guy, or you get mad at anybody else, you want to go back and look in you and find out, okay, why did this upset me? And just kind of look. And what you're going to find is a way that you help to keep the ego going in you. Obviously, those ideas of some people are better than other people supports the idea of individual selves, right? If you saw everything as God, you wouldn't have that idea, right? So then what do? You go in and you journal and you find out, wow, you know, I really do believe that certain types of people are better than other certain types of people. Okay, so what do I do with that? Well, then all that you do with that is every time the thought shows up, you know, you look at somebody who is, you know, a particular race or who doesn't have an education or who's homeless or whatever, and that thought comes up in your mind, you know, that he's not as good as others, you just say, ah, there's that thought again. I really would like to let go of this.
And that's all, the arrow of true realization.
That's all you do. And you just do it over and over and over again.
Accept,
and it starts
I
to die.
I accept the fact that I make judgments. I accept the
yeah.
fact that...
And I'd really like to not, you know?
Yeah.
But you do it without judgment, without judging yourself for it, right? You just say, ah, I see that thought. I see I just did it again. But you know, I'd really like to see that change. And you just do it in a very, very gentle way. And what will happen is at some point you will amaze yourself Because you will be looking at people that you know that your mind would have had these judgments about before, and it won't be there. It just won't. You know, you look for it and you can't even find it. I say, what?
The noticing the difference there's enough power in that to disallow, that it disallows. So I have the experience of judging somebody because of their social status, and then I have the experience of not judging them, and that's a pretty big relief. And it stays and it grows. It seems as if it stays and it grows, and it disallows. It disallows because I've had both experiences. I know it's like, you know, this guy's kind of low on the totem pole, low in social status,
yes,
annual income, whatever. But I've had that experience, and I've had the experience of just looking at him and that's my brother right there. And so I like that. I like part B. So I keep doing that, and then it seems like it just disallows.
Yes.
I can't think of another way to say that, but it's not. It doesn't take conscious effort to.
Right, and that's you know, I'm glad you said, because you can't make yourself let go of your judgments and your prejudices and your bias. And if you start doing that, you're just going to be in a fight with yourself. You know, they come, they're conditioned, right? They come, they're conditioned, and you say, ah, there it is again. I'd really like to not do that. And you just let it be. Ah, and pretty soon it isn't there. So it's a very, very gentle process. It's not a struggling with yourself.
And of course, in the Course, the symbology is giving it to the Holy Spirit.
Giving it to the Holy Spirit. That is the symbology. You turn that thought over to the Holy Spirit, and some people need to do that because they need that religious faith to let it go. I used to, when I first started this process, I used to, in my mind, take whatever idea it was I wanted to be free of, and I would put it in a box, wrap it up, put a bow on it, and then give it to the Holy Spirit. I went through all that whole process because I think I needed to do that because I think that I didn't think it was that easy to let go of a thought. I had to put some effort into letting go, right? So my effort was putting the thought in a box, wrapping it up with a bow, and giving it to the Holy Spirit. So whatever works, you know? Whatever works. But if you are consistent in realizing that you don't want that anymore, because that's what I'm doing when I'm putting it in a box. I'm realizing I don't want that anymore, right? And if you're consistent in just realizing, that key word is realization, realizing I don't want this anymore, then eventually you don't have it anymore. And again, when you notice that it's not there, that won't be a day when you looked and judged and then, you know, let it go. That will be a day when you looked and there was no judgment. All of a sudden you go, wow, it didn't happen. It just didn't occur. And you will notice the difference. Yeah. So, again, be grateful for your brothers who show you what you have learned. And then welcome your lessons in vigor. What does vigor mean to you guys?
Lots of energy.
Lots of energy.
Enthusiasm.
Yeah, it's very energetic and very enthusiastic, both. And so this is saying, you know, welcome your lessons in vigor. Because the more that you see that you need to let go of, and the more that you go through this practice of letting go, the faster you're going to awaken to yourself. And that's an exciting thing. But the way you get to awakening to yourself is by learning your lessons, letting go of the things you need to let go of. So if you really want to awaken, why not be excited when you discover another opportunity to let go of something? And instead, what tends to happen, the average person, again, they really want to just pretend like they're perfect now, which you are. In truth, but we're at the human level here, right? At the human level, there's still a whole lot of ego supporting going on, right? You want to pretend like you're perfect now, and if somebody happens to say something that seems to be pointing out something that maybe you could look at, you just get mad at them, right? This is saying, welcome your lessons in vigor. Be grateful. Say, ah, you know, what I really want is to awaken to myself, and if I hadn't realized that, you know, then that was another obstacle. But thank you that I realized that, because now I can let that go and I'm one step closer to my goal, right? So welcome your lessons in vigor. And if you can adopt that attitude, you'll be surprised how quickly you'll start seeing stuff and letting go of stuff. If you can really do it in joy. Remember, in the Course, Jesus says he needs happy learners, right? Happy learners. This is what he's talking about. You'll wake up a lot faster if you're happy to see your own ego and let it go.
Actually, I agree with you.
No, go right ahead.
One of the things that I find to entertain myself is I recognize when I'm judging somebody, and if I can see the connection, I'll go, well, you know you did that too. It's just time that separates you.
Yeah,
you know, and I'll giggle about it, and then I'll just move on.
Yeah.
Or if I see somebody walking that looks really funny to me, like what they have on or how their hair is fixed, I'll laugh because I'm thinking, I've had days where, I have one of those days going on right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sleepy, my afro is crooked, you know.
I had noticed that.
Sleeping on it in the plane and the wind blowing it almost off my head. You know, and I'm like, I'm having one of those days now. And I'm like, I'm sure I look really funny to the people in the supermarket, but that's okay. That's today. You know, maybe next week I'll have my makeup on and my high heels and I'll be in that space that I feel really fun and good about myself. But for the time being, I just have fun with this stuff.
Yeah.
And even when I have some stuff going on now. And when I tell the story to people, I say, I can't wait to tell you about what I created this time. Let me entertain you, you know, and I tell them these stories, and I'm like, can you believe what I cooked up this time? Mm-hmm. You know, this particular box, this scenario, I wrapped this lesson in. Mm-hmm. So, and then we go about the details, and we find something in the course to read, and then I move on, somewhat. But I'm on the right track.
Yeah, it sounds like
you. But, I just entertain myself with the stuff that my ego comes up with.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, this is free comedy break.
Yeah. If you can laugh at your ego, that's a giant step forward.
Are you
forward.
Kidding me with the stuff that comes up? Like, you really thought that made sense. Yeah. It's just too funny.
Okay, so welcome your lessons in vigor and that you may grow in mastery of the way. Embrace all that you see, knowing it comes from you, which you just demonstrated for us. And then, but it does say, correct that which needs correction, which I love that line because, you know, it's asking you to be grateful and to love and embrace. And it says, but, you know, if you do notice that you're judging, go ahead and be willing to take that back, or go ahead and be willing to change that. Correct that which needs correction. So it's not asking you to judge your errors, right? But it is asking you to go ahead and correct your errors. You know, you don't have to keep them out there. You don't have to keep repeating the same thing over and over again. And immerse the mind in the reflection of truth. In whatever way you can, the more you can immerse the mind in the reflection of truth. The reflection of truth would be a course lesson. The reflection of truth would be, you know, whatever you contemplated this morning. The reflection of truth would be, you know, focusing on your own changeless awareness. But the more you can immerse the mind in something that reflects truth instead of what it would be immersed in otherwise, what it would be immersed in otherwise would be thoughts about you, right?
Separateness,
yeah. So immerse the mind in the reflection of truth. Okay, so verses 18 to 25. Look on all that you see and love it, but do not identify with it. It is not your truth or your reality. It is a reflection of your thought. One thing that sometimes people get stuck on, like when they're watching the news and somebody does, you know, like go into a place and shoot a bunch of people, which none of us love to see those appearances. And to a point, we are definitely all responsible. It's our thoughts that create those kinds of appearances. But it's not helpful to identify with that in a very personal way. You know, like people will say, oh my God, I created that. That actually isn't helpful. That is going to reinforce that I am bad belief. So you don't want to personally identify with it and yet take responsibility for it. That's the trick. And the way that I do that is I say, we created that. We're doing that. And the way we're doing that is with judgment thoughts like this one. And I wanna help change that, so I'm gonna become even more vigorous about letting go of my judgment thoughts. But so don't identify with the appearance in a very personal way. And in fact, if you notice when you do it, when you identify with the appearance in a very personal way, you're reinforcing the idea that you're a person. Right? Yeah. I created that. These are my projections. Who's that I? Who's that my? So, unless your I means universal I, which most of us it doesn't, it's better just to say, we are creating this. You know, we, and I'm a part of that, and so I'm going to take personal responsibility for what's right here in my head. Right? But, let's see, sentence 4, be grateful for the love that you find, embrace it, but also be grateful for the reflection that seems not to be love, for it is what it seems not to be. It comes to you in love and grace to show you what you have thought that you may choose again. Now this is a very difficult concept for some people, and it was for me for a time. But even like when someone walks into a school and shoots up a bunch of children, this is saying that appearance is love also. And in order to understand that, you have to understand what love is. We think of love as an emotion, right? Love is actually a power. It's a force. And what love does is whatever we ask it to do. So if our mind is constantly reflected on judgments, attack, defense, blame, fear, right? The way love gets that order is, these are the kinds of appearances I want to see. And then love creates those appearances. Remember, love is a power, not an emotion, right? And it's just, and the power does whatever it is we're focusing our passion on. Remember, passion is where we're putting our faith and our desire together. And if I'm sitting around thinking how much I don't like this person anymore and I wish this person wasn't in my life and I'd be happier if this person wasn't here, I'm putting a whole lot of passion in wanting, in a way, somebody dead. And so why wouldn't there be appearances out there of somebody walking in and shooting up a bunch of people? Now again, we all do this. It comes from all of us. It doesn't come from one of us, right? We all do this. But that is actually love. That is love. The way it came in a personal message was, love is giving through Spirit to Spirit that which Spirit requests. Love is giving to Spirit through Spirit that which Spirit requests. And when you realize that in a very deep way, you do see, of course, that these appearances that we aren't in favor of are coming through love. But then you also realize that if you change your mind, love is going to do something different. There's going to be a different appearance, right? Because love is just following directions, you could say, right? Love is just doing what we're putting out there. So what we need to do is start putting something different out there. And that's why, again, the Course says, I think it's my favorite line in the Course. The Course says, the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. But first, listen to those first two words, miracle worker. You know, if you accept the atonement for yourself because of this process that creates appearance, you're actually a miracle worker because you are changing the appearances as you change the way you think, right? That's a miracle worker. And then the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. The word atonement literally means correction. You know, this just said, correct that which needs correction. You accept the correction here. And the more of us that do that, that can actually have a huge effect on the appearance. You know, it's a matter of, you know, critical mass. Somewhere in the Course, I do swear I read something about critical mass. When critical mass shifts, that people are accepting the atonement for themselves, there will be different appearances. But we could, each one of us can only do it with this person here. I can't make you do it. I can't make you do it. I can't make you do it. And if I'm judging you because you're not, guess what? I'm not doing it. Right? The only person that I can do this with is me. But the other amazing thing is, again, your thoughts come from all of us as well. So as I start accepting the correction for myself, and I'm just focused on me, boom, some thought shows up over here in your mind where you start seeing, ah, look what I'm doing. I think I want to let go of that now. You know, that is a manifestation through love of the work I've done. Every single one of us, when we started receiving this calling to wake up, that calling to wake up came from somebody else somewhere doing this work. You know, it sets it off in all of us. This is all connected. There is no separation. And the Course talks about that too. The Course talks about how, I don't remember the exact words, but the idea is you accept this correction for yourself, that things are going to change, and they may be completely on the other side of the planet and you never even know about it. That again is because of the connection. So you're really focused on accepting the correction, and somebody on the other side of the planet, some desire in them to wake up starts to be born. And that's how eventually we get to critical mass. You know, so we're all like little sparks that's setting off a fire. But we need to, you know, blow on this spark right here, right? And that helps to inflame the whole world. So, look on all that you see and love it, but do not identify with it. It is not your truth or your reality. It is a reflection of your thought. Be grateful for the love that you find. Embrace it. But also be grateful for the reflection that seems not to be love, for it is what it seems not to be. It comes to you in love and grace to show you what you have thought, that you may choose again. Praise your mistakes, that they may be corrected. For it is only in praise and acceptance that the truth may be known. As some people say, what in the heck does that mean, praise your mistakes? Well, the reason that is so shocking to us is because typically what we do is judge our mistakes. And sometimes when you do one thing, the pendulum needs to swing all the way to the other side before it can get back to the middle. So, you know, if you to say, I'm going to stop judging, if judging is such a habit, you might just stay right there. So what you want to start doing is praising them. Say, oh, yes, I made another mistake. You know? And you're not really praising it in the way that, you know, in the way that you're going to keep repeating it. But you're learning to praise your mistakes instead of judge your mistakes. Say, ah, looky there, I made another mistake. Goody for me. Okay, now I can let go of that. Right? So you kind of exaggerate in the other direction. Exaggerate in the other direction to help you break the habit of judgment.
Stuff is coming up to be released, so I guess if I look at it that way, it is easier to celebrate it.
Yes.
Doesn't yeah. always feel good, but all right.
No, it doesn't always.
No, I need to acknowledge that part.
No, it does not always feel good. And, you know, usually we don't do the lesson all the way until 8:15. We usually stop closer to 8 and then have some silence and discussion, but we've gone all the way to 8:15 tonight. So we do need an assignment. We always do an assignment. And it seems to me, if you guys are in agreement, that the assignment this week might be to try to focus on yourself, your true self, in whatever way you know to do that.
Because I thought you were going to say praise your mistakes.
Or, well, you can do that if you want. Which one do you want to do? Which one do you want? Both. Okay, let's do both. Focus on yourself and try to praise your mistakes. Yeah, let's do both.
Okay, can you review for the slow people?
Yeah.
Focusing on the self. Say that again.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. Because yeah. my ego is like, well, I can do that. I'm like, no, that's not what she meant.
She didn't mean you.
Yeah. Smarty pants. Yeah.
The way that I started focusing on myself was as the ego self would change. Like one minute it's happy, one minute it's not happy, it wishes something was different, you know, one minute it's scared, one minute it's confident. I would observe the change in the ego, the emotional changes in the ego, and then I would just ask myself, but what's here that's not changing? What is here that is definitely what I am, that was exactly the same when I was frustrated as now that I'm happy. I was exactly the same when I was happy as now when I'm frustrated. There's something in you that you know, it's not an object, so you can't pinpoint it. Mm-hmm. But if you keep looking for it, you'll notice it because it's always there. Mm-hmm. And like your ego can be pissed right now. What's this that's here though that's still me? That was also here a while ago when I was really happy because I thought things were going my way. Mm-hmm. What was here when I was 5 that's here now that I'm this full-grown woman? Mm-hmm. My whole body has changed. The way I think has changed. But there's this changeless part of me. And that's how I came in touch with it, was always asking and noticing it. And you know what some people will call that is where you're looking from.
And you also just was writing, you said something about listening without thinking.
Yeah, that's a great way to start training your attention to go where you want your attention to go, is listening to whoever is speaking without thinking. And when you catch yourself thinking, you just gently return yourself to listening again. Yeah, because we do need to train our mind. The mind is just used to just running wild. And so we need to train it to be focused where we want it to be focused. And that's a good training technique. All right, so I will stop the recorder then.